Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 114. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Well, howdy ho, neighbor.
Hello, Pete. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo, and there is nothing bigger going on in the world of Nintendo than the recent release of Super Mario Odyssey for the Nintendo Switch. So basically, that's going to be the bulk of what this week's episode is all about, our impressions and our discussions of Super Mario Odyssey.
Great, let's do it.
All right. So if by some chance you've been living in a cave somewhere or maybe under a hat, Super Mario Odyssey is, of course, the expansive open-world 3D platformer carrying on the tradition of Super Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, and Super Mario Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up this game as soon as I could. I've been playing as many hours of it as I can, and so far I am really enjoying it. Pete, I'm sure you picked it up as well. What are your general thoughts?
Yeah, Chris, it's fantastic. It's everything you want from a Mario game.
Yeah, I'm very impressed so far. It just seems to be ridiculously imaginative, super creative, endlessly fun, and in some ways it reminds me of Breath of the Wild, just in the sense that there is stuff to discover around every corner, but this game is more densely packed.
Right.
There are tons of these power moons to collect, there's coins everywhere, there's world-specific coins, there's mini-games, and there's just endless, endless variety.
Yep. It actually, like, I guess if I had to compare it to any Mario game, it kind of reminds me of Super Mario World in the sense that there's just a lot of new things. There's a lot of, like, cool discovery and, like, wow, this is, I had no idea this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's just stuff all over the place and you never really know what to expect. Sometimes you just pound the ground in a certain spot and out pops one of these power moons. Sometimes you have to collect 5 moon shards. Sometimes you have to maybe take control of a character and deliver them to a specific place. Or sometimes maybe you're just completing an extensive platforming challenge. Sometimes maybe you're just exploring and you wander into some obscure hidden location and there's some treasure for you to pick up. And it's just kind of mind-blowing how much they've packed in there.
Yeah, sometimes you're answering Sphinx riddles that aren't really riddles.
Yes.
And sometimes you... No, what's cool is you start doing something not knowing what's going to happen, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, this is amazing. Like, I just figured out how to fish. Or, mm-hmm. Oh, I just realized that that big one's going to give me a moon.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, almost everything is there for a reason. Either it's there because it's going to give you some sort of reward, or it's there to, you know, in a sense, prevent you from getting said reward. But the whole game is just meticulously designed, and, you know, almost every last inch of it is fun.
Yeah, and I love the varied, like, play mechanics. So each thing that you possess kind of has a feel of its own.
Yeah, that's true.
There's also things you can, you know, ride that you don't even have to possess, which is mm-hmm. also kind of new for a Mario game, I mean, unless you're counting, like, Kuribo's shoe or something.
Well, I mean, you used to be able to ride Yoshi, so
right. That's true.
I guess some are kind of like that. But yeah, you can ride a scooter, you can ride the Jaxi in the Desert Kingdom and travel over the place with him. So yeah, there's lots of cool stuff. And yes, as you were implying, capturing enemies with your hat and possessing them, as everybody knows, is the big new play mechanic in this game, where you get to use their abilities and force them to grow facial hair.
Right. And not only does that, like, kind of add these new, like, puzzle elements, like, you know, some of these, like, bullet bill mazes and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but it also introduces a whole set of play mechanics that are different to each character that you possess, or enemy that you possess, as it were.
Yeah, and it really replaces traditional power-ups. So what do you think of having this in there as, you know, sort of the main hook of the game and not having, you know, different suits like the Tanuki suit or things of that nature?
You know, I like it. It feels fresh. It feels like this new idea.
Yeah,
that,
totally.
You know, I know that that's not a new concept. There's been other games that have done stuff like this, but I think for a Mario game to do it and just do it so well, and they use it so intentionally, there's just like, you know, all of a sudden you get a guy that, you know, has super long legs and there's a bunch of things that are small that you can smash. It's like they just, you know, they handpick all these things that you can do and then they make these levels that are just brilliant that support those abilities.
Mm-hmm. And somehow it all feels really, really natural to me. Just suddenly you throw the hat and you're in control of this creature and it doesn't feel weird at all. Somehow it feels, you know, despite the fact you have all these new powers at your disposal, it still feels like, yep, this is still Mario. This feels totally normal. Yeah, of course I'm some creature that can suddenly fly or extend my body or something like that.
Right.
But it still just totally fits within the world of the game. I have to say, though, it's very interesting at the very beginning, the first time you do it,
mm-hmm.
how Mario is totally freaked out being turned into this fraud.
Mm-hmm.
It's very reminiscent of Majora's Mask at the beginning, where it just seems like this horrifying experience.
That's true.
And they just kind of gloss over it for the rest of the game. It's like, okay, I guess Mario's cool with it now.
Right. Like, maybe he didn't want to become those things.
Didn't seem like it at first, but you know, after that first one, everything seems kind of fine. So tell me, what enemies are you enjoying possessing the most?
Oh, boy. Well, Bullet Bill, as I mentioned, is a really fun one. It's very gratifying. It's, I don't know, there's this thing about being able to be Bullet Bill. You know, he basically can just fly around. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a really simple play mechanic, but it is really fun. And there is kind of something that, you know, after all these years of being chased by Bullet Bills, now you can finally take control of one, and it's somehow therapeutic or something to be able to, you know, turn the tables on your enemies.
Totally, and it's cool to be able to, like, kind of aim it and, like, blow things up.
Yeah, definitely. Are there any others that you're really liking?
Mm.
I have to say that for me, the ones I've been really enjoying are the Gushin, which is that water enemy who can, you know, basically fly and propel himself through the air using a water spray. And it's kind of like using Flood from Super Mario Sunshine.
That is pretty cool.
And then there's the Tropical Wiggler who can extend himself. And you like that name, Tropical Wiggler?
You're a Tropical Wiggler.
Why, yes, I am. People have called me that many times. But I like the way that he can extend his body across these great distances.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of terrifying at first. It's like, oh, man, I'm totally going to fall into this pit here. But you realize pretty soon that the controls are up to the task and he's really maneuverable. So it ends up being really fun to zip from point to point.
Yeah. I really like the, this is kind of a random one, but the, oh, man, what's the name of the heads? The Easter Island heads?
Moai, of course.
Moai. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I love the being able to possess the Moai in the desert level,
mm-hmm.
and he has this like cool little sunglasses mechanic where when he's wearing the sunglasses, you can see platforms that aren't there.
Right, you get to see invisible platforms.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. It's like a really unexpected surprise, but it works really well.
Yeah, the only problem is, of course, when you have the shades on, you go really, really slow. So then it's like a balance. Do I want to move fast, or do I want to have the ability to see these platforms?
Right.
So it's very interesting the way they balance that.
I also really like being able to possess a Cheep Cheep.
Oh, yeah.
Which I know sounds just ridiculous, but the thing is that it's just nice to be able to swim around in water with like...
Yeah, infinite oxygen is very helpful. Yeah.
Infinite oxygen and jet propulsion and a fairly simple play mechanic on how you swim up and down. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, there's not much to him, but he is really, really useful.
It feels like you're cheating, but you're not.
Another one I really like is one that shows up pretty late in the game, is this bird enemy called a Pokio. It's a bird with this really long woodpecker-like beak, and you can stab into walls with it and then can fling itself in any direction.
Mm.
So that can be a pretty darn cool and useful play mechanic to add to your arsenal.
Yeah, very cool.
Also, I like the Hammer Brothers. I mean, at first, I thought they were really tricky to control because they're always sort of bouncing all over the place. But once you realize how to control them, and you can actually, you know, jump even when they're sort of bouncing around and get extra boost that way, it ends up being really, really helpful.
Oh, cool.
So they end up being really fun as well.
Yeah, I mean, to speak to that, it's kind of interesting because, you know, Mario games especially aren't known for having controls that require some serious getting used to.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I noticed that with the Bullet Bills, like, I was not super aware how you change directions. And it's not like a left-right thing. It's actually like an analog. You point the direction you want to go.
So it is.
Kind of learning the play mechanic of each character is almost half the game.
Hmm. I don't know. I found almost all of them to be really intuitive, but I suppose it's true. Learning some of the nuances does take a little bit of getting used to. A little bit.
Yeah, or even like the Cheep Cheep, you know, there's like you hit the opposite button that you'd think you go up and down with.
I admit, I kept doing that. I mean, it makes sense the way they have it done. The jump button makes you go up, the other button makes you go down. But for some reason, I kept getting it reversed. You're right.
Right.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't have an excuse.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, there's just these little mechanic things. But, you know, in a normal game, that's fairly common. But with Mario, that they've done a very intentional job of not having that be the case for years. So it's just kind of interesting to see that mechanic. I mean, I guess you could argue like Sunshine had a little bit of a wacky mechanic too, but this one in particular, there's just moments where you're like, whoa, what am I doing? But once you master that enemy, it actually is really gratifying and satisfying.
Yeah, it definitely stands apart. Of course, probably the coolest thing to take control of would be the Tyrannosaurus Rex. I mean, how can you not love the Tyrannosaurus Rex? Especially Tyrannosaurus Rex with a mustache.
Kind of have to, but at least, you can't do push-ups when you're a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
It's hard. But let me tell you, one of my initial thoughts about this game was basically the same thought I had about Galaxy. It just feels like it is this endless supply of imagination, and there aren't really any hard and fast rules you have to play by. It's like, okay, so you're a guy in suspenders and a hat with a mustache, but no, now you're a giant bullet. Now you're this long-legged critter that can flip really high. Now you're a Paragoomba, and you can fly all over the place. And going back to the T-Rex, I love the fact that once you get to your first full world, that's pretty much one of the first things you can do is go and possess this Tyrannosaurus. And it's just, I feel like they're saying to themselves and saying to the gamers, what is the craziest thing we can think of? Oh, a Tyrannosaurus Rex with a mustache. And so they put you in control of that, and it really sets the tone for the whole game. And it just tells you, yes, there are almost limitless possibilities.
Yeah, you're right.
It's like, do you want to suddenly be in a classic side-scrolling 2D 8-bit platformer? Sure, we're going to do that. Oh, you want to have Mario in his underwear? Okay, no problem. We're going to do that. Do you want to suddenly be in reverse gravity for really no reason? That's totally cool too. Oh, do you want to suddenly warp to a level that kind of looks like it's out of The Legend of Zelda and fight a hyper-realistic monster? Sure, let's just go ahead and do that. It's just all in there, and it's great.
Oh yeah, hey, you want to play some 2D Mario? You want to warp into a mural and now you're in a mural? Yeah, you're right. It's crazy. There really are just like endless possibilities in this game. And I think that was what, talking about initial impressions, I think that was what really stood out to me was that this game is one of those games where you really just have no idea what you're in for. And there's something really special about that. Like, just to have this feeling of like,
Anything is possible.
yeah, there's really going to be some crazy stuff in this game.
Yep, definitely. So I think there are around, 15 kingdoms to visit during your initial playthrough of the game. There's a good variety of stuff. You have your desert world, your snow world, a forest world, a lake, a jungle. There's that food-themed world. And of course, there is New Donk City. I was wondering, do you have any favorites of the worlds you've visited so far?
Honestly, everything I've visited so far, I'm really impressed with. I'm not as far as you. I've only made it to New Donk, but I'm just impressed with the amount of stuff packed into each world. And it feels to me like almost like Mario 64 is like the thing I compare it to,
I can see that.
in the sense that these levels really feel complete, like they're this own little world where they each have their kind of like own little set of rules.
It's true.
And it just feels awesome. I remember I didn't want to leave the sand area until I like could do everything I could possibly do.
Yeah, that was a really cool world. I love the fact that it's just so vast. And there's so much to explore. And it gives it a distinct character. I mean, I didn't feel that same way about the other worlds, but they all have sort of unique and different things about their environments too. And I love that they all feel special, yet just in a different way.
Yeah. And then there's these like crazy surprises too. Like in the desert world, you finish the, first kind of main quest, and then all of a sudden it's nighttime and there's like zombies that come out of the ground. And yeah, it's just kind of odd. It's like you're just perpetually stuff's thrown at you where you're like, what am I supposed to do?
Well, I have to say, one thing it is really good about is showing you where to go to move along the main story. That is never a problem. There's always tons and tons of stuff to do off the beaten path, but one thing it does really well is saying, if you just want to progress through the main game, this is how you're going to do it. And they make that really obvious. Everything is very, very clear. And so in that regard, it feels a lot like, Mario Galaxy, where you sort of knew the path you had to take to forge ahead.
That's
But
true.
in a lot of ways, you're right. It does feel like Mario 64 and just, this huge, vast playground. And of course, you want to explore everything, but you don't need to explore everything if you're in a rush or something.
Yeah, but honestly, I mean, for this game, I really suggest that anyone go try to like get all the moons you can. It's like the really clever stuff in each level.
Oh yeah, totally.
Totally worth playing through all the way.
Yeah, and a couple things that stood out to me were playing the water levels and the snow level, where, you know, in a lot of games, and even in Mario games, you know, usually I get to those, I'm like, oh no, I'm kind of groaning about it, because it's like, oh no, I'm slipping on ice, oh no, I'm drowning in water. But even those levels, they have managed to make really, really fun. They've drained away all the frustration. Of course, there are some parts that are extra challenging, but you know, it's that way in every level. But yes, yeah, somehow they have taken even these levels that you know, tend to get on people's nerves and made them extra fun in this game. So that's great.
Yeah, I was really sort of not looking forward to the water level, and then I played it and I was like, wow, this is actually really fun.
Yeah, yep.
And the swim mechanic is different in this game than like previous Mario games, I've noticed.
Well, it was certainly a lot easier for me to swim, you know, right off the bat than in some past Mario games and in a lot of platformers. So,
well, for example, he can do like a butt drop into water.
Yes.
Which is, which sounds funny, but it's like, you know, Mario 64, that wasn't possible. You didn't just plummet to the bottom of the lake. All of a sudden, the water controls would take over, like as if you actually cannonballed it into water. In this game, they kind of reinvented the way Mario swims, and I like it. It's better. It almost reminds me of the original, where you kind of hit the button if you want to swim up. But other than that, you're kind of on your own to go any direction and walk even on the ground.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's very intuitive and you know, a lot easier to control than a lot of games of this type. Another world I really, really like is, you know, basically that first one you get to that I was talking about with the T-Rex, the Cascade Kingdom. I like that one just because it's super pretty. And, you know, I felt like I could almost feel that water spray like coming off of the waterfall. And I just felt refreshed. And that big Triceratops skeleton is there. And it just looks so cool. And it's not really like anything else you ever see in any other level of any other video game. And so even though it's basically, you know, the first level, it still seems really, really neat and innovative. And I just loved exploring that place.
Right.
And then, of course, we have New Donk City. And I have to say, I was really surprised how long it took to get to New Donk City, considering this was sort of the primary stage that had been shown. It was like Nintendo's showcase piece for the game.
Yeah.
And then it ends up being more than halfway through the game.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah. And then when you get there, it's not at all what you expect. You know, from all the stuff we've seen before, you know, New Donk City is this, you know, lively, happening place. And when you first get there, it is dark and it's creepy and spooky and it's full of these nasty little bugs and, you know, there's tanks in the streets. And I have to tell you, when I first got there, two things really stood out to me. One, just it totally gave me chills, like with all the rain effects and stuff. It reminded me exactly of like Link to the Past back when I first played that game on Super NES and getting the rain at the beginning.
Yeah, you're right. Totally.
And then the second thing, which is even weirder, was it somehow reminded me of Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes, which also starts in this rain-drenched area, you know, same dark aesthetic. And, you know, it's totally different types of games, but still it reminded me of that in some ways. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, the music's all intense and it's like, you know, the rain pouring down. Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, it's a really fun level and it culminates in this crazy awesome boss fight. And it's only after that that it opens up into the city that we've known from the demos and all the stuff Nintendo has shown. And, you know, you can freely explore it and all of that stuff. But it really was not what I was expecting. That's one thing this game keeps doing over and over again, is it, you know, defies your expectations. You think you know what's happening, and that's like, haha, we're going to pull just a little swerve on you here and give you something a little bit different, but something that's still awesome.
Yep. You know, speaking of, one thing that I was kind of surprised by is I love there in each level, there's like a painting that you can jump into.
Yes.
And you warp to basically another world, but it's kind of a snippet of this other world.
Right, just a little tiny island.
Yeah, so like the first time I saw New Donk City was basically on a skyscraper from like, you know, 1,000 feet away. And
oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you have no way of getting to the city, but you can kind of like take it all in and kind of, you know, just get a glimpse of it. And it's really fun. It, for some reason, it like kind of captured my attention and my imagination. Just like, oh man, can't wait to get to that level. It looks so cool.
Yeah, yeah. There were only a couple times where it shows you a level that you haven't been to before, but every time it gives you this little tease and it's like, here's what's coming. Get ready for it. It's going to be really cool when you get to the main area. So yeah, it is something that did really, really well.
Yeah, I almost feel like in a way the game is like self-aware, whereas like in the past maybe Mario games weren't so much. So things like that, where they just know that you're dying to see these other levels. So like here's a little peek behind the curtain, and then you know that's just it's unique and it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I have to say, once I was in New Donk City and I was exploring and I was looking around, there was one thing that kind of got under my skin, and that was how come Pauline pretty much just pretends she doesn't even know who Mario is? I mean, talk about harsh.
Yeah, what's up with that? Seriously. Maybe you guys had a bitter breakup.
I can only imagine. I don't want to get, too much into spoiler territory here, but that festival you get to participate in is pretty darn epic. That part, that's one of the high points of the game for sure. I kind of wish, there was maybe more Donkey Kong stuff, but who knows? Maybe there's still some things to encounter that I just haven't got to
Yeah, don't you go spoiling nothing, Hoffman. I
yet.
haven't got there yet.
I'll try not to. I won't say anything more than that, but yeah, it's some good stuff. Another new element introduced in this game is a new batch of villains. We have the Broodles. It is a gang of five rabbit characters that are Bowser's wedding planners.
Amazing.
Yeah, so what do you think of these guys? Are they good Mario villains? Do you like them? Tell me your thoughts.
I feel like I haven't really got to know them too well. They don't really seem to have much of a personality other than just kind of being bratty.
They're definitely bratty.
You could say the same thing about the Koopa kids, probably.
I suppose, yeah.
But I feel like they are, in a way, they are lacking a little personality, just like from the looks of them, the way the Koopa kids are. They all have their own personality. But their actual fights are pretty fun. I think maybe if anything, they could be a little on the easy side at times, but I'm sure that that gets harder as the game progresses.
Yeah, eventually you'll definitely get to fight some tougher versions of these enemies. And I was kind of with you at first. I was thinking, maybe they need a little bit more personality. Maybe they feel a little bit out of place. These don't really look like your usual Mario characters. Why isn't it the Koopalings? But they've definitely grown on me. The more I encounter them and the more they attempt to provoke you, I think the more I ended up liking them, and I've decided they are definitely, in my opinion, worthy adversaries of Mario and worthy inclusions in the Mario lore.
Nice.
Now, you haven't got to it yet, but at one point, after you've defeated all of the Broodles, you will end up fighting sort of their ultimate forms, and it is a really, really cool boss fight, and I won't say anything more than that, but it's definitely something you should look forward to.
Nice. I do like the sound of that, actually.
It's really fun. And there's just lots of all kinds of cool details in this game. Like when you hit the minus button and you go to the map screen, it's on this travel brochure.
Yeah.
And have you read all the content in the travel brochures?
No, I do like how it tracks kind of everything, and you can go through and like figure out what you're missing, or at least make some guesses about the parts you're missing.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff is really helpful, but just there's all this copy there on the sides talking about the landmarks and the characters and the things you encounter in each region, and it's just a whole bunch of, really, sort of extraneous detail they didn't need to put in, but it's in there, and I find it really fleshes out the world, and it's just a really, really cool thing to be able to have and, read up on and to sort of indulge in if you're into that type of thing.
That's cool. Yeah, I didn't even know you could read that, but I'll go check that out
Yeah,
for
and of
sure.
course it's different for, whatever land you're in. It just tells you something specific about that. It's useful stuff.
I really like the, in each world there's these basically a shop you can go into, and you can buy things with regular coins or with the world specific coins.
Yes.
And I really like that there's an incentive, there's a very good incentive to collect all the coins in each world, because you can buy, not only can you buy outfits that way, but
Yes.
you can also buy souvenirs.
Yep.
And those souvenirs kind of get added to the Odyssey,
Right.
your ship.
Yeah, you can put stickers on the outside or
Yeah, you start to see like travel decals.
Put collectibles on the inside. So yeah, lots of cool stuff you can buy.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's one of those things where it's such a simple thing, but it's a really good incentive to like make you want to scour every little nook and cranny finding all the coins.
Yeah, for sure. Another little touch that I really like that they didn't need to put in is what happens with Mario's idle animation. Now, have you let Mario just idle until he sort of just falls asleep and takes a nap?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that on its own is, kind of neat, but it's sort of expected.
Yep.
But what I love is how depending on if there are any nearby, birds will come and like land on his nose and like walk around on his head while he's asleep. I just thought that was a really cool little touch.
Wow, I didn't even notice that. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there are these things that probably a lot of people won't notice, and they're still in there, and that's what makes this game so impressive.
Yeah.
And another thing is when you are on that map screen and you use the fast travel, every time you do that, your hat actually flies off in the correct direction of where the landmark is that you're going to. Like, they totally could have just used some generic candy animation, but no, every single time it flies off in the actual direction, and I just think that stuff is great.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Of course, there are also tons of homages and nods to past Mario games. Obviously, there's all the Donkey Kong stuff in New Donk City, and there's a lot of Mario 64 references as well. Almost all of the costumes in the game are references to, you know, usually obscure offshoot Mario titles.
Mm-hmm.
So in one sense, it's like this massive, massive love letter to all this stuff from Mario's history. But then, on the other hand, in some ways, I feel like this game is one of the least Mario-like games at all. Like, it totally breaks with tradition in a bunch of ways.
Yeah, totally.
And you don't really notice it at first. Like, earlier we were talking about how there are no power-ups. There's no Super Mushroom. There's no Tanuki suit.
Yeah.
None of that stuff is in there.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's replaced with the capturing. There's also, you know, no mushrooms at all, really. I mean, is that like a Mario platformer series first to not have any mushrooms to grab?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was like, you know, the heart is cute and all, but like, I wish it was a mushroom, really.
Yeah, why isn't it a mushroom?
And then you can't die. I mean, you can die, but...
Right, there's no lives.
You just lose coins, yeah, so...
Yeah, just lose 10 coins, just a measly number of coins.
But you can lose a lot of coins that way.
You can, especially later in the game. But early on, it basically feels like infinite lives. What happens if you have zero? Does it matter? Do you just have infinite lives? I don't even know. I haven't got to that point. I'm not likely to get to that point. But yeah, it's an interesting little change. Another change, though, that seems a lot more substantial to me is that the game actually feels like it has a progressing narrative from level to level. Like, there's a reason you're on this stage. There's a reason that Bowser is there. And sometimes, you know, as you're pursuing him, you might get sidetracked for some reason. You might crash for some reason. It's not like a super deep story, but it feels like the most story there's ever been in a Mario platformer.
Yeah, you're totally right. It's interesting to see. It's surprising because it works really well.
It does. It does. I mean, it's such a small little thing, but I feel like it adds a ton to the charm and the appeal of the game.
Yeah, it really does.
Now, you said that you had only just got to New Donk City, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Well, there's some stuff going on later in the game that I would love to talk with you about, but in the interest of not spoiling you and not spoiling the listeners who haven't quite got to this point, all I want to say is that the stuff near the end of the game is completely insane. There are some amazing boss fights. And then, you know, as is tradition with a lot of the recent Mario games, there's lots of extra stuff to do even after the credits roll. After you have more or less beat the game, you've probably only seen like half of what is on offer.
Wow.
I think there's probably 3 secret kingdoms at least. And the challenge really ramps up. I mean, a lot of the stuff in the main game, you know, is on the fairly forgiving side.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want a challenge, that stuff is definitely there later on in the game. I think they're trying to make it accessible enough for pretty much everyone to be able to finish. But if you want the hardcore challenges, that stuff is there too.
That's cool. Yeah, I love when they do that. And, you know, glad it doesn't disappoint.
Yeah, I mean, there is something there to challenge gamers of pretty much every skill level.
Nice.
So I have to say, as much as I am loving this game and enjoying this game and just being amazed and immersed by it, I do have one complaint.
Oh boy. What do we got?
And that is the motion controls.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I was worried about after I played the demo at E3, and I'm pretty sure that at that time on the podcast, I expressed concern about it then. And guess what? They did not fix that.
Now, how are you playing this game, Chris?
I am playing with the Pro Controller.
Okay. Not the separate Joy-Cons as they recommend.
Right. I mean, they put up that giant sign when you turn on the game saying, basically, you should play with the separate Joy-Cons. But I love that Pro Controller.
Yeah.
It's a really great controller, and it feels excellent in your hand. And for me, there's no reason to not do that.
Yeah, I actually tried playing with the Joy-Cons, mm-hmm. and I was not as happy as playing it with my Pro Controller. I think partially just because you hit the buttons so much, and the buttons on the Pro Controller are just big.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't tried the Joy-Cons, but yeah, that was sort of the feeling I got, is that, you know, that kind of would maybe be a bit of an issue for me.
Yep.
But back to these motion controls, you know, there are some controls that is the only way to do them. Like, you know, if you want to flick your hat up, you have to, you know, gesture upwards.
Yeah.
If you want to do the homing attack, you have to throw your hat and then shake the controller.
Yep.
And then there's the spin attack, and there is an alternate way to do that, but the primary way to do that is to shake your controller to the side, and that makes your hat spin around you, and that's, you know, super useful at times.
Right.
And I guess you can also do it by, like, spinning Mario in a circle and then throwing your hat, but, you know, because that takes time to charge up, it isn't really useful to do it that way.
Right.
And so you've got all these moves, they're only motion controlled, and meanwhile, you've got these controllers with all these extra unused buttons. So if there were a good reason, you know, that would be fine with me, but for poop's sake, the X and A buttons are completely redundant. The ZL and ZR buttons both do the exact same thing. I mean, every time you take over a different enemy or creature, you know, usually there's some gesture-specific move that you can only do by shaking your controller.
Right.
And it's like, why can't you just assign that to the X button or something? And, you know, people could just say, you know, I'm being picky about this.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it's not the end of the world when you're playing it on a TV.
Right.
And I'm very thankful that at least, you know, the Pro Controller does have motion controls, so you can play that way.
Right.
But if you're playing it in handheld mode, you know, you're shaking the whole console, you're shaking the screen, and, you know, you can't really tell what's going on necessarily. You know, I did experience that at E3, and it kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely hear what you're saying. I dislike when you attempt to do, like, you know, throw your hat around you in the spiral move,
mm-hmm.
But instead, because you're surrounded by enemies.
Yeah, yeah, and, like, that would happen to me. I would try to do that, but instead it would react to shaking it up, and so I throw the hat up. And
yeah, and you basically lose a little bit of health because you mm-hmm. just got hit by, you know, 50 enemies.
Yes.
And it really can ruin some of your, like, it can take you out of the game, because there's these things you want to set up, there's these, you know, controls you really know well, and you want to be able to use it when you need it, and when you can't, it is definitely frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, I'm having way too much fun with the game to worry about this, you know, basically a minor inconvenience.
Right.
And I'm not playing it in handheld mode, so I'm not really having those issues. But I would love a patch that adds more control options, so you could just map that spin attack to the X button or something like that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Because other than that, it's, you know, almost a perfect game as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and it really does have, speaking of controls, it already has in the options, like, far more options for controls than any Mario game in the past.
Mm.
So it feels like, you know, I actually went back to that looking to see if there was any other options. Because uh-huh. I was like, wait a minute, like, they've got so many other things here, like, I should be able to do something. I mean, it's by no means is it extensive, but for Mario titles, there really is typically no options.
Yeah, it's true.
So being able to have any is kind of nice, but I am hopeful, you know, I think they did that with Zelda. They added a few more additional options for button mapping. I would love to see that happen in Mario as well.
Yep, me too. Of course, in addition to the game being released, there were also 3 brand new Amiibo.
Amiibo!
Oh, and did that tickle your Amiibo fancy?
Oh, you better believe it. Yeah, I got all 3 of them. I got the Wedding Mario, Wedding Peach, and Wedding Bowser. I don't suppose you picked these up?
I didn't, but I do like them. They look pretty cool.
Well, of these 3, Wedding Bowser is far and away my favorite. In fact, it might be my new all-time favorite Amiibo.
Wow. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, first of all, it's Bowser in a tux. And there's, you know, pretty much nothing more ridiculous or awesome than Bowser in a tux. Second, it just has a crazy level of detail, like this really nice shine and pattern on the pants and the jacket, and this detailed pinstriping on his waistcoat. And the waistcoat is purple, so it's extra cool. And then he's all Bowsered up with, you know, metal spikes and riveted shoes. So it's just a really, really cool, detailed Amiibo. Although I have to say, you know, looking at him right now, I don't understand how he has this tuxedo jacket on underneath his spiked shell. I mean,
yeah, how'd that happen?
Is it just cut, you know, really perfectly so it just adheres to the rest of his body, or is his shell kind of removable? I don't know. Obviously, that's not an issue with the amiibo, but it does kind of make you wonder about how Bowser gets dressed. I mean, I guess that's why he's normally running around Starkers, but it does make you think.
It does. I'm not sure I want to think, but...
Anyway, then we've got the Wedding Mario amiibo, and it's pretty nifty too. The pose is unique, where he's got one hand behind his back and the other hand outstretched. But compared to the Bowser amiibo, it's a lot more plain. It's just a standard white tuxedo with gold buttons and a red bow tie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's solid, but it doesn't blow me away.
Sure.
And then we have the Peach amiibo in her wedding dress, and... I'm not super keen on this one. She's got this perpetually surprised expression on her face, which is kind of lame. And the amiibo is pretty low detail. There is some glitter like embedded in her dress and on her veil, and that kind of makes it stand out and is different from other amiibo that are out there. But it's a pretty plain figurine overall, and it just makes me think to myself, it would have been much cooler if we'd gotten a Pauline.
Yeah, totally. Well, there's always that chance that there will be more, right?
I suppose. You know, they're still making more Zelda amiibo. I would love it if they came back with more amiibo for this game and did, like, Pauline, did just a regular Mario with Cappy, and maybe did the Brutals. I think that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I could actually imagine the Brutals being amiibos.
I have to say, though, these amiibo are very useful when it comes to their in-game functionality, especially, again, Bowser.
Oh, yeah? What does it do?
If you tap him on the controller, it shows you the location of the nearest purple coins.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, if you've got, like, you know, 97 coins in the world with 100, and you're looking for those last three.
And you're pulling your hair out.
Yeah, that can be a real lifesaver. Of course, you know, you could do it when you don't have any of them, and you could just, you know, find them all easily that way. But that kind of feels like cheating. But the Mario and the Peach ones also are super useful and feel even more like cheating. Peach automatically gives you the life up heart.
Oh.
So you'll bring your hit points up to 6 at any time, and as well as restoring your health. So yeah, that's super useful. And I haven't used the Mario one in game yet, but it gives you invincibility, which also seems extraordinarily helpful. Yeah, temporary invincibility.
Nice.
Like I said, those seem more like cheating than the Bowser one does, but I mean, that's some really useful functionality. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if with some of this late game stuff, I decide, yep, I'm just going to use Peach here and give myself a little extra boost for this extra challenging battle up ahead.
Yeah, totally. You have to wonder if they made these amiibo as a means to let people use them as cake toppers in actual wedding cake.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I hope there are enough out there in the world that people do that. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Totally great.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably already happened.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised at all. Anyway, as I've said, I'm really liking the game overall. I am happy with all my amiibo purchases, and apparently a lot of other people are enjoying the game too. Apparently it's already sold more than 2 million copies.
Yeah, 2 million in like 3 days.
Yeah, yeah, pretty darn impressive.
Now, Chris, I got one question for you. I bought the eShop version. I just opted for the digital.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming you bought the physical copy.
Yes, I did.
I heard the insider only the lyrics to your favorite, Jump Up Superstar.
Yes, this is true. I mean, it's kind of sad to open up the game and there's like nothing in there. There's no manual. There's no other goodies, just the game card. But yeah, on the inside, on the back of the insert, it lists all the lyrics to Jump Up Superstar, the song that Pauline sings in New Donk City. So that is a pretty nice touch.
That's actually pretty amazing when you think about that.
Yeah, it's a really cool little thing that you know, shows that Nintendo is at least doing a little something extra. I think they kind of missed an opportunity by not doing a collector's edition with this game like they did with Breath of the Wild.
Right.
I don't know why they haven't ever done one for a Mario game.
Yeah.
But whatever, it's an excuse to not have to spend, you know, like some ridiculous amount of money. And regardless of that, you know, I'm still enjoying the game immensely.
Yeah, now, have you sang Jump Up Superstar, like, in the shower, now that you have the lyrics?
No, I'm sorry. I have not done that yet. Sorry to disappoint you.
Well, if you could record that for the listeners, that'd be great.
That's not likely to happen, but I'll keep it in mind. Well, this seems like a good place to take an intermission, so let's do that, and then when we come back, we will continue our discussion of Super Mario Odyssey. All right, we are back and we are ready to continue our discussion of Nintendo's latest and greatest, Super Mario Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
We have already talked a whole bunch about the games, we've talked about the worlds, we've talked about the new characters and the capturing mechanics. One thing that we haven't really talked about too much yet is how it has all of these really, really great costumes that you can change Mario into.
Yeah, and it's funny because they don't really serve any purpose necessarily.
That's right. I mean, a couple of them let you unlock new areas in the different kingdoms. You have to be dressed in a certain way to get to an area. But most of them don't really do anything. They're just totally aesthetic.
Right. But that being said, they're super fun and it kind of makes you want to collect them all.
Yes, absolutely. 100% true.
Yeah.
So, of course, we have gone through and compiled a list of our top 10 favorite Super Mario Odyssey costumes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to it. Let's go down this list of the best of Mario's new threads.
Let's do it.
Starting with number 10, it is the chef outfit. It is Mario dressed as a chef.
Now, we should probably forewarn people to skip this part if you really don't want to learn any more details, but we kept it pretty spoiler-free, so...
I suppose that's true. We're not going to get too spoilery, but yes, if you don't want to know anything that's coming up later on, it might be good to fast forward a little bit. Regardless, number 10 is the chef outfit. It is an homage to Yoshi's Cookie, where Mario appeared in that outfit. And it's just kind of neat and hilarious to have Mario dressed up as a chef.
Yeah, it's funny. There is something weird about seeing Mario just like in 3D and running around with these costumes on.
Yeah.
Because it just looks like his natural state and makes it for really funny scenarios where you have a little chef Mario running around.
Yeah, and of course, it's very appropriate for the Luncheon Kingdom that you get to, somewhat late in the game. But yeah, it's a good outfit to go with that world.
Yeah, perfect.
Number 9, we have the sombrero and poncho.
Yeah, I mean, they've shown this all over the place, but
yes,
you gotta love Mario wearing a sombrero and a poncho for some reason. It's just amazing.
You can't really go wrong with the sombrero and poncho, and I especially love it when he transforms into the 2D Mario to go into the mural stages.
Oh, yeah.
There's just something extra appealing about, an 8-bit sprite-based Mario in a poncho and a sombrero.
Yeah, and it's funny to think that, for all of these costumes, they had to make a 2-dimensional version as well, like an 8-bit version.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, for every single one. And this originated, back in the Game Boy version of Kix, which was a puzzle game that was not originally created by Nintendo, but they added their own Nintendo-ness to it. That included a bunch of cutscenes, and one of those was Mario in a sombrero and poncho.
And for those trying to Google that, it's Kix with a Q.
Yes, not a K like the breakfast cereal.
Right. Those are for kids. Or wait.
Those are tricks. You're confusing your breakfast cereals now.
But what? Don't moms do something with Kix or something?
I think they're kid-tested and mother-approved.
Yes, that's it.
Which you could probably also say about the sombrero and poncho.
Yes, exactly.
So moving on to number 8, we have the mechanic outfit.
Nice.
Which comes complete with a Famicom hat. That is the reason that I like this one so much, is the Famicom hat.
Yep, pretty cool.
It's evidently an homage to a game called Famicom Grand Prix 2, a racing game that... obviously, it was something on the Famicom and did not come out in the U.S., so I'm not especially familiar with it. But still, I gotta love that Famicom hat.
Yeah, you definitely get your NASCAR on. You kind of look like Ricky Bobby, Mario version.
Next up, at number 7, we have the Builder helmet and Builder outfit, which is basically the outfit from Super Mario Maker, right there on the box.
Yeah, but it's cool. It's cool to see it in 3D, and again... when he runs around in it, it just kind of looks appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great outfit. I really, really like that outfit when they introduced it in Mario Maker. And on top of that, it seems like it's, kind of maybe making a nod to his appearance in Wrecking Crew, where, he had a helmet sort of like that, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I just think it's a great look for him. So that's certainly one of the niftier outfits I like to wear in the game.
Pretty nifty.
Up next, the classic cap and suit. And this one, Pete, you said you got this by scanning the Mario Smash Brothers amiibo, right?
Yeah, that's one of the few amiibos that I own. It was actually the first one that I bought. I'm a big Mario player in Smash. And yeah, I tried using it on the game, and it unlocked the classic cap and suit.
Yeah, and what that is basically an inverted colors Mario that has red overalls and a blue shirt, as opposed to the, you know, blue overalls and red shirt. And that was how his outfit was in the original Donkey Kong. So that makes a ton of sense when you consider all of the Donkey Kong nods in this game. But you could also think of it as a nod to Super Mario Bros. 2 on the NES, where on the box art for the game, he was wearing, you know, a very similar ensemble with the red overalls. For that matter, this is also how he was dressed on the Famicom box art for Super Mario Bros. 1. So there's a lot of nostalgia in this outfit.
Yeah, and you'll notice that the cap kind of looks the same as the basic Cappy cap that you get in the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that there's like a, like almost like a canvas looking texture over this costume. It looks pretty cool though.
Oh, very nice. Okay, on to number five then. Number five is the painter cap and outfit. And this is, of course, another great homage. It comes pretty much straight out of Mario Paint on the Super NES.
That's right.
Complete with, you know, sort of a beret-like hat and paint splatters on his apron. You know, Mario Paint is a great game that, you know, really doesn't get enough attention. I mean, it's almost an afterthought, but it was a really cool, innovative product, and it's really neat to see it homaged in this title.
Yeah, it's kind of like Nintendo paying its respects towards all these old school Mario games. And especially like Mario Paint, you almost think, do they even remember they made that?
Right,
but,
right.
Yeah, it's cool that they do.
Yeah, they definitely went all out with the cool references.
Mm-hmm.
Number four on the list, we have the Waluigi cap and suit.
Mm-hmm. And how do you get that, Chris?
That one you get by scanning in the Waluigi amiibo.
Oh, wow.
That is a black and purple outfit with the purple cap and the upside down L. And for me, just black and purple is a great combination. It looks good in almost anything. It looks good if Waluigi is wearing it. And it looks extra good, I think, if Mario is wearing it. So this one didn't make the list because it's just a great homage, but it actually just looks really, really nifty on Mario.
And the only way to get it is via amiibo, huh?
As far as I know, I'm not aware of any other way. I haven't seen a way to buy it in a store yet.
Wow, I might need you to send me some amiibo in the mail.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen.
No. You might not ever see them again.
Exactly. I am kind of amused by the description in the game, though, where it says the Waluigi cap is hardly used. Kind of taking a dig at poor Waluigi there.
Yeah, I saw a screenshot of that on Twitter. So funny.
Yeah, poor guy.
Again, I love that this game is self-aware.
Yeah. You know, another one that's in there is the Luigi outfit. And that's not in our top 10 list, but it makes a reference that the L on Luigi's cap stands for winner, which, of course, is some reference to some Mario RPG game, I think, where they make some comment kind of to the opposite of that. But that was kind of a neat little nod that's in there.
That's funny.
Anyway, on to number three. The Explorer hat and outfit. And this one comes from Mario's Picross.
Yeah, I actually think this one's probably one of the most adorable outfits that he wears.
Yeah, it's a really, you know, neat outfit. Comes from one of my favorite puzzle games. Yet, despite being cute, like you said, it's also, you know, kind of rugged. It's got, you know, this khaki look with the pants and the shirt and the backpack and the boots. And, you know, he looks like he's ready to go out on an adventure. I mean, if I was going to have someone go out on an adventure for me to rescue a princess, I'd probably pick this over, you know, overalls and suspenders, you know?
Right. It's true. But and he kind of looks like a little beekeeper or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's true also. Number two, Mario's boxers.
Yeah. Him and his skivvies. It's really funny for some reason.
Yes. I mean, we all saw this when Nintendo had the video and they showed him running around on the beach in what we all assumed was his swimwear. And, you know, everyone was commenting that, oh my goodness, Mario actually has nipples. But that's not the scandal. The scandal here is that he is not in a swimsuit. He is just running around in his underwear. We have learned that he's just run around in his underpants, which he had to pay 1,000 coins for.
Yes.
Think about that.
Those are pretty expensive underpants.
Yeah, that's like 10 lives in a previous Mario game. That's how much underwear is worth in the Mushroom Kingdom, or at least in whatever kingdom you buy this in. This isn't the Mushroom Kingdom, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, that's still pretty expensive. Some tourist trap selling underwear for 1,000 coins. But does that mean that he didn't have underwear before that? I don't really know.
And I like how, you mentioned there's no mushroom references. If you read the description of this one, it actually says it has a nice mushroom pattern on it.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of funny, because you're like, wait, there are no mushrooms in this game. How do they know?
Yeah, I thought it was just polka dots myself. But yeah, it's just a fun outfit to run around in pretty much any world you're in, because, you know, it's somewhat hilariously inappropriate to have Mario running around in just his underpants.
Yeah, so it's kind of the costume you want to put on when your friends come over and you want to show them the game. You'd be like, oh, look, I'm yeah. running around in Mario and he's in his boxers.
Yeah, it is just a great little outfit to have. Not as great, however, as number one on our list, which is the black suit and fedora, which is the black pinstriped suit with red tie and some blue details. And this costume is all the rage in New Donk City, and it just looks spiffy.
Yeah, he kind of looks like Gangster Mario.
Yes, he does. If he had a Tommy gun in his hand, it would not look out of place. But basically, he just looks like he's ready to go kick some Koopa butt, and I totally dig it.
Yeah, looks like he's going to take names and I don't know.
Play games.
Yeah, exactly.
We know how it goes. So yeah, that is our top 10 list of the best Super Mario Odyssey costumes, with one little asterisk.
Mm.
There is another outfit that would definitely make our top 10, but it's just too spoilery to discuss here.
Yeah. I made you promise you wouldn't tell me.
Yeah, suffice to say, it is awesome. It's something you will get late in the game. Please look forward to it. It would probably come in, you know, somewhere around number 3 or 4, I think. But it's really great.
And if you haven't seen all the outfits, just don't Google it, because there are a lot of spoilers out there. I don't know how many outfits there are total, but there's quite a few.
Yeah, there's at least 40.
Right. And, I mean, you're going to see him sooner or later. You might as well just, like, leave that as an element of surprise. It's pretty fun.
And we've already spoiled most of it.
Yeah,
here,
even though we just spoiled 10 of them for you. You know, still. Wait till you played the game through, and then look.
Anyway, that's just one of the things that makes this game so fantastic. I mean, there's so many things that we've already talked about. Great worlds, enemies, costumes, you know, using the capture mechanic. All these great moves. It is an amazing game. And for me, you know, this might really be the game that has proven the value of getting a Switch. I mean, there's been tons of great games on Switch before, but a lot of them have been available on other consoles.
That's a good point.
And a lot of them have even been on Wii U. But this might be the first game that is exclusive to Switch that's made me say, yes, you absolutely need to own this system.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, I would recommend this game to almost anyone, especially being a fan of Nintendo. I think that this could be a system seller on its own, but when you start to pair this with all the other stuff that came out this year, it's pretty crazy. The argument to buy a Switch is a lot higher than it was prior to this game coming out.
Yeah, with all due respect to ARMS and Splatoon 2, I would totally have to agree. I'm just loving every minute of it, and you know, can't recommend it highly enough.
Good times.
And with that, I suppose that brings this discussion to an end, and we should wrap up this episode.
But first?
That's right. We do have time for one more thing, and that would be a dramatic reading.
Mm-hmm.
As we have discussed previously on the show, Pete, you put out a call to action to our listeners. You demanded that they write some sort of bizarre Pete versus Hoff fanfic, and they did indeed answer the call.
Well, I did ask more nicely than that. It was more a request. I just thought, you know, if there are people out there that think it would be funny to hear, you know, some side story between you and me about getting in wacky misadventures, why not let them have at it?
Well, apparently there were. And so we got some submissions and we have chosen a winner. It comes from listener Joey T. This story has it all. It has Hoff. It has Pete. It has beards.
Nice work, Joey T.
Yeah, I think we should probably reward him for the submission. You know, maybe I think we should try to send him a nice little eShop card or something, don't you think?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
This is worth its weight in gold right here.
So I suppose, without any further ado, we will get into this dramatic reading, known as The Final Fantasy Fight of Many. It was one of those sort of can't-make-up-its-mind-if-it-wants-to-be-gray-or-sunny kind of days at the Nintendo Power offices. Chris, the Hoff Hoffman, was tirelessly at work on another brilliant strategy guide. The game was Final Fantasy VI for Game Boy Advance. He was almost at the end of the game and was looking to put the finishing touches on his walkthrough. He headed down to the Department of Screenshots, looking to get some epic pictures for his guide. As the Hoff entered the offices, he realized there was someone new in the screenshot chair. A young Yeti-looking man with a fireflower red beard. Hey, you're that hotshot beta tester from product testing. Wait a minute, what happened to Scott? Asked Hoff.
Oh, Scott? He called in sick. Said he was too hot. My name's Pete.
Pete reached out his hand to welcome his fellow employee. Hoff, narrowing his eye, shook Pete's hand. He couldn't quite place it, but he felt there was something off about this Yeti man. Remembering his deadline, he decided to put his caution to the side and started to explain what kind of pictures he needed. Pete inserted the game into the screenshot capture device, and as they were going over Hoff's notes, Hoff noticed a paper bag behind Pete that had begun to glow. "What's that bag behind you?" Hoff pointed out. Without looking, Pete replied,
"Someone left their lunch here. It's got Captain N written on it, but I don't know who."
All of a sudden, a bright light burst the paper bag open, and a glowing bag of mini potato chips started levitating in the air, creating an ominous hum that seemed to suffocate the room. "It's the micro potato chips," Hoff said as he slowly slinked in his chair. The room started to lose focus, and then four bright lights soaked the room. Pete, the Hoff, the screenshot capture machine, and the bag of potato chips began to shine as bright as the sun, and could no longer be seen by human eyes. Suddenly, random 16-bit sounds filled the room, and all four lights bled into each other and had become one beacon. Then the room flashed back to normal. But the two Nintendo employees and that mysterious bag of chips vanished, leaving behind a silent, somber office. A vibrant wind could be heard as the bright light faded from their vision, revealing their new surroundings. As Pete and Hoff opened their eyes, they found they were in a vibrant green meadow surrounded by rocky mountains.
"Where are we?"
asked Pete. "Well, first of all, you landed on top of me, so we can start with that," replied Hoff. They spent the next 10 minutes untangling their facial hair from each other's faces. As they pulled apart the straggling strands, a mysterious figure emerged from a cluster of trees 50 feet away. A large, steam-powered mech shot out into the clearing that Hoff and Pete appeared in. At first glance, it seemed to be a ticked-off robot, but then they noticed a warrior steering the great machine. The stunning female fighter navigated her mech through the open field, then suddenly she came to a halt about 10 feet in front of them. Then they realized she was staring directly at Hoff. After the rush of this stranger's entrance, Hoff's memory caught up to him. He recognized the warrior as Terra, protagonist from his Final Fantasy game. "I can't believe it. How is this possible? Are we in the world of balance? Are we in my game?" exclaimed Hoff. "Yes, Hoff," replied Terra. "You and I have braved many battles together across this land, but today will be the most important one." She hopped off her mech and walked behind the two of them. She knelt down and picked up the bag of chips that the two of them had neglected till that moment. "An evil being known as Captain N brought you to this world by means of this bag of salty snacks. I don't know his reasons, but they can't be good. That's why we must undo what he's done at all costs. In order to get you back home, I believe all you have to do is eat these chips. However, in order to get back, you must start this world over. You will forget this incident ever happened, and the two of you will forever be rivals, locked in an eternal battle of wits, and you'll never know why." "I knew there was something off about you. Wait, what? Start over? Like, my progress in this world?" Hoff said, glaring at Pete.
"None of this makes sense,"
shouted Pete. Of course this is senseless. It was designed by Captain N, replied Terra.
Well, I guess we'll have to try, said Pete.
Well, I don't really care for that flavor, replied Hoff.
I'm sorry, Hoff, but you were eating these chips, deleting your save, and we're going home.
Pete and a reluctant Hoff grabbed the bag of chips, ripped open the bag, and began to devour the micro-potato chips. Terra walked back to her mech, looked back, and said, Good luck, you two. And Hoff, I hope you are willing to start our adventure over someday, so we can finish it. Also, Nintendo's coming out with a portable console hybrid system in 2017 called the Nintendo Switch. It'll be totally off the hook, but you'll forget about this. Bye.
What?
Pete and Chris simultaneously shouted as they finished the last bites. Then, suddenly, their world flashed into darkness like an unplugged CRT TV. Pete and Hoff woke up and lifted their heads from their desks in the Department of Screenshots.
What happened?
The groggy Yeti man said. Pete looked up and found a horrified Hoff staring at the monitor of the screenshot capture machine. It's gone.
I know that look.
All gone. What did you do? Cried Hoff. The cartridge had been erased, showing only the option of a new game.
I don't know. I'm not sure. The last thing I remember was putting the cartridge in.
I'll never forget this, Pete. For the rest of my life, you will be my nemesis, and I will be yours. I will make every back and forth we have comically infuriating, bellowed Hoff.
Man, I wish I could accidentally delete the save of this conversation,
replied Pete. And they continued this mild banter for the rest of their lives, and possibly for a podcast.
Nice. Nice work, Joey T.
Yeah, there you go. We asked for it, and we received. That was quite the epic tale of GBA cartridges and entangled beards and Captain N references.
Yeah, he's kind of got like everything in it. It's kind of surprising. I'm like, wow, yeah, check that. He's got the facial hair. He's got
it's almost like he was there in the Nintendo Power offices, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty common that a large steam-powered mech would just like show up right outside Redmond headquarters.
I mean, it was at least once a week that would happen. Right. Anyway, once again, a big thank you to listener Joey T, as well as everybody else who turned in a submission.
Mm-hmm. We might even have to read another submission at some point, right?
It seems pretty likely. Seems pretty likely.
Well, we'll see what people say. And, you know, honestly, if you would like to still write one, I think you could still do it. We're not, like, going to just, like, turn them away. I mean, we can't promise a gift card every time, but... Hoffman will go broke.
Anyway, I guess that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be swell if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
Rocket League comes out on November 14th.
And Pete's Mushroom Kingdom alter ego, Petey Piranha. We will see you next time.